going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Talk about the playoff predictions. Let's start out west before we get back to the east. Love to hear your order for the teams that are going to make the playoffs. Why don't we start out at 8 and head out to 1? I think we all know who 1 will be. But let's go from 8 to 2.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, boy, in those last couple playoff spots in the west and really in the east too, I think 1 through 6 in both conferences I'm pretty confident. I'm not necessarily in the exact order, but I was able to pick those without hesitation, essentially. But getting those last two spots in both conferences was a challenge because it's pretty wide open, even with a few bad teams. And I'm pretty confident there's no chance they'll make the playoffs. So number 8, I've got the Nuggets. They've been kind of knocking on the door of getting into the playoffs the last few years, and they've come up short. But I think the continued development of their young talent and the addition of Paul Millsap is kind of the key thing that will get them there. Number 7, and I think this is kind of an underrated team, and I think people maybe felt like this team is destined to crash, which is Memphis. But I have them in the playoffs again because of a couple reasons. One is Marc Gasol and Michael Conley. So they've got two, all-star level veteran players, leaders, proven winners. And then Fizdale as a coach, I think, is a very solid coach. And, he did his apprenticeship in Miami and the Heat organization and waited for the right job to come open. So he's a no-nonsense, not going to get out coached, not going to get out prepared. Other teams may have more talent, but I think he's going to keep his team focused, especially on the defensive end. So I've got Memphis at 7. At number 6, I've got the Clippers. So I know Chris Paul's gone, and a lot of people think they might fall off the edge of the West Coast here without him. But they did get some nice assets in exchange. I think Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley, and even Sam Decker, I think, is evolving into a decent rotation player. And then the pickup of Gallinari, and of course you've got the core star of Blake Griffin. I'm not a big DeAndre Jordan fan, but he still puts up numbers. I think he had 25 rebounds last night, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yeah.
And he was 4-for-4 from the line. So I don't know if that's an indication of where things are headed throughout the season, but impressive in some ways, even though he does have his limitations. I don't think he's a championship center, but certainly during the regular season, he's proven he can put up numbers and help the Clippers win games. In the number 5 spot, I've got Portland. They barely slipped into the playoffs last year, but that backcourt of McCollum and, of course, Damian Lillard is very potent. And Nurkic in the post, he got hurt in the playoffs, so he's going to be healthy now. And I just like the stability of that organization and Terry Stotts. They're not going to get to the conference finals or anything, but they're a potent team that's, for the most part, I think they had one outlier year where they slipped out of the playoffs, but are on the right track. Number 4, I've got the Spurs. Kind of a toss-up with the Spurs at 4 and Houston at 3. I could see that going either way. I think the Rockets are probably better suited for regular season wins and seeding, but the Spurs are better suited for playoff series victories. So that's why I have Houston a little bit ahead of them in the 3 slot. Number 2, I've got OKC, and I just think that core 4 of Westbrook, Carmelo, Paul George, and Steven Adams, that's almost as good as any 4 in the league. And with Westbrook's intensity and leadership, and Carmelo and Paul George didn't go there, even if they may be headed somewhere else next year, they didn't go there to not succeed. And, they're going to go there to try to challenge Golden State. So I'm expecting big things. And the other factor with OKC is just the stability of their front office. Billy Donovan's an excellent coach. And you might recall they were a game away from getting to the finals just a couple years ago. And with Billy Donovan as the coach. Now, granted, they had KD at the time as well, but I think he's a very competent coach. And I kind of wondered, as he transitioned from college at Florida to the NBA if he'd be that successful. But I've been very impressed with them and what they're doing there. And then, of course, at number one, it's Golden State, which everyone has them in that slot, although they lost their opener.
Yeah, exactly. That was interesting, the Houston. On the outside looking in,
Bulls fans might notice that I don't have Minnesota, which I think everyone's expecting this magical leap with the acquisition of Jimmy Butler and the maturity of Karl Anthony Towns and Wiggins. But I just don't see it. I know they lost their opener to a depleted Spurs team, actually. The Spurs didn't have Kawhi or Tony Parker. But I just don't think Minnesota's ready for that leap. And they only won 31 games last year. So even if they have a 10-game improvement, which is quite dramatic by any standards, that just puts them at 500, which would be tough to get into the playoffs at that level. I know Portland got in at 500 last year in the West, but I just don't see it happening. New Orleans with Anthony Davis, and I don't even like to say the name DeMarcus Cousins. I think he's a joke. And I just think he's too dysfunctional for them to make a serious playoff run. I think Dallas and Sacramento will be competitive and improved, but not playoff teams. And I think the Lakers and Phoenix will be awful.
No, I agree. I back to Minnesota, since they are probably the most popular team in Chicago, I will say I got them for 39 wins, and they were a massive disappointment. They were the biggest disappointment, according to Vegas, last year. Vegas had them at 41. They won 31. I think most Vegas has them at 48 this year, and I think they'll win about 39. They do have, obviously, Jimmy Butler's a great player, obviously. But the Bulls got absolutely torched last year for not, quote-unquote, surrounding him with shooters. Well, they had Doug McDermott, who the previous season was top 10 in the league in three-point shooting. And they had Nico, who the previous season shot 39%, going into the year when they signed Wade and when they signed Rondo. The Timberwolves had the best three-point shooter with any amount of volume, shot 37% last year. They have no shooting, far less than the Bulls had. So I don't understand where... I haven't read that criticism really anywhere. I haven't found it anywhere. You sign a guy like Teague, to me, is a joke. I mean, I think that guy's on his way down. And Taj, God love him, but he's clearly near the end of his career. You could have got a guy like Patrick Peterson, to me, on a much friendlier deal. If they stay healthy, I think they'll win. But they'll be about 500. But that's one.
Yeah, I was thinking about, like you, I'm thinking 36, 38 wins.
Yeah, but... One more point I'd like to make. I don't think Towns has missed a game in his career. I don't think Wiggins has. I know they both played 82 games last year. That's unheard of, the odds of guys remaining healthy and not missing any games season after season. It just doesn't happen. The odds are going to tell you they're going to miss something. Somebody's going to get injured. So, we'll see. I think if they do have injuries, they're in big trouble. I think that bench is awful. So, it's interesting you said you don't think they'll make the playoffs. I think they'll get in as like an 8 or 7 seed with 39 wins, but I agree they're not going anywhere and they're going to disappoint far more than most people expected. Let's go to the East. Love to hear, first of all, before we get into the predictions, just your comments on the Hayward injury, which was horrific, and I think we both agree on that. But what was your take on that injury and how it's going to affect the Celtics?
Well, I think it's devastating. And I heard Kenny Smith say something about the Celtics roster changes. Even with Hayward healthy, he said he saw this as a baking process, not a microwave process. So he didn't envision the Celtics as championship contenders this year anyway, even if Hayward would have been healthy. And I agree with him. I just think they gave up some very key assets and the young guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum look very promising, but it's going to take some time. And you tell me you're an NBA championship team with Aaron Baines as your center. I don't know. I don't see it. And he's a serviceable role player, but I think it's going to take some time to adjust. And now with that injury, I think it's devastating. And I would have had them at the number two seed though, with Hayward healthy. I've got them dropped down to the sixth seed, and that's
wow.
And that's based on my admiration for Brad Stevens as a coach, being able to be creative and come up with ways to win games during the season and how good I think Kyrie Irving is. Although, you know, obviously he's got a little heavier burden now with Hayward, who, you know, should have been a probably 17 to 20 point a game scorer if he would have been healthy. The other thing about the injury, I mean, it's horrible, and being someone that still plays a little bit and pick up games, you don't want to. Actually, I've not quite watched the whole injury. I didn't watch him land. It's kind of like that Sean Livingston injury years ago. I've never watched it. I don't want to ever see it. And thankfully, Sean Livingston came back and has had a nice career. But the one thing from what I saw highlight, though, it seemed like a kind of a high-risk, non-fundamental play for so early in the game. Right? It looked like the play had no chance of working, really. And I just thought it was an odd non-fundamental play, you know, throwing an alley-oop just minutes into the game. It seemed like the first game of the regular season, you know, the players maybe need a couple of minutes to kind of get their footing, so to speak, and just, I don't know, I just thought it was an odd play, and obviously it doesn't take away from what a horrible situation it is, and, you know, the fact that he's going to miss the season, and, you know, you wonder, even with the advanced medical capabilities today, if he's ever going to be the same.
No, I agree, and I think it's awful that, and if you think about it, they're going to go through what the Bulls went through. You know, the Bulls, when that contract kicked in, when Rose's contract kicked in, that was taking up a huge percentage of their cap when he had that knee injury, and he missed the subsequent year one of that deal. So he didn't play at all. The Celtics are going to experience that, and then the Bulls had the unique situation of Rose basically missing the next year in its entirety. He played 11 games. And I question whether or not he'll be back, you know, strong for next year. I hope so, you know, for his sake, because he seems like a good kid. But goodness gracious, what a horrible thing to happen.
Right. Well, and then Jeremy Lin had a season-ending injury last night. So not that Brooklyn is going to be setting the world on fire, but Jeremy Lin is a very competitive, solid player and can help teams win games, especially during the regular season. So I would say Cleveland has got to be licking their chops here, knowing that Brooklyn pick is theirs. And certainly Lin being out for the season isn't going to help. I thought Brooklyn was going to be bad anyway, and losing a guy that would have been a starting guard or certainly heavy minutes in the rotation and a very competent NBA player is really going to be a setback for Brooklyn as well.
I saw the play. Was it an ACL injury? What was the...
Something with his knee. I mean, he was up high. You know, he was driving to the basket, and actually Miles Turner had an incredible block on the play. But, again, I some of these injuries, it's hard for me to watch. So I don't know if he... I think he landed awkwardly, and so, yeah, he's done for the season as well. So why don't we transition to the East, and we'll go 8th up to number 1. And I think just like in the West, everybody knows who number one is. Cleveland, of course, with LeBron. Mm-hmm. Maybe LeBron's last go around in Cleveland, but we'll see. So in the number 8 spot, I've got Charlotte. I know they missed the playoffs last year, but they kind of have a good, solid core. Although they've got some injuries with Batum out, and so it's not so much I'm impressed with Charlotte, but I'm not that impressed with anybody else that I think is out of the playoff picture in the East. Right. Number 7, I've got the Pacers. So they made the playoffs last year. You know, they obviously made the Paul George trade, but I think they've got an interesting combination of a couple of emerging talented young players with Miles Turner in particular. But I think Oladipo is a talent. I know he's there's some people questioning about, you know, him being overpaid, and having your first couple seasons in Orlando, that's kind of like having your first couple seasons in Sacramento out west, right? It's hard for anybody to succeed or do well there. And so I think he's got something to prove and as a young talent. And then they've got a couple of veteran guys like Al Jefferson to help bring these young guys along. Darren Collison's back there, who's, again, I think serviceable and probably not that much of a drop-off from where Jeff Teague, you know, ended his time with Indiana. In the 6th spot, I have Boston, which we just talked about. I would have had them probably at the 2 spot if it wasn't for Hayward. Although I think there are still some question marks as well about the rest of their roster. at least short term. I think everything I've seen of Jason Tatum, I think he's going to be a real star in the league. And but again, he's a young kid, and it's a man's league. In the five spot, I've got Miami. So, you know, they should be a little more healthy this year. And again, I give them a lot of points just for the culture of their franchise, from Pat Riley to Spoelstra, and their stability and where they're going to go. In the four spot, I've got Milwaukee. And if Antetokounmpo stays healthy, they could be maybe even inching up toward the number three spot potentially. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some interesting young talent there, and I like what they put together. Number three, I've got Toronto. So they've kind of been plugging along, and but you know, you've got the two stars with DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. Valanciunas, they've supplemented with some interesting young players and young talent. Ibaka re-signed there. So I think that's a very solid team, so, you know, a sure playoff team. Number two spot, I've got the Wizards. And obviously, again, you've got the Wall, Beal backcourt, which is, I think, the East version of Curry Thompson. And, you know, they made some noise in the playoffs last year. They weren't quite ready, didn't quite know how to win against Boston, which I thought that was a very winnable series for them, especially knowing what we know now, that Isaiah Thomas was playing, you know, far less than full strength, even though he did play out that series and, you know, kind of limped his way to the conference finals. But I think the Wizards lacked a little bit of maturity in being able to close out, you know, winning beyond where they got. And then the number one spot obviously would be the Cleveland Cavs with LeBron. And although they've had a little shift in the roster of a couple of the role players, remains to be seen what happens with Isaiah Thomas's health and how soon he'll be back. But even without him, I think they're still head and shoulders above everybody else in the East. How about you?
I think it's going to be the Cavs, and I think it's going to be the Warriors again. I don't think it's, and I really don't think it's going to be close. I didn't think it was going to be close, even if, you know, Hayward was healthy. By the end of this year, it's going to be LeBron again, you know, carrying his team to the finals. But I do feel this would, I thought beforehand this would have been their last year where this would have happened, because I do think LeBron's leaving. I do think it's very likely, because he's not going to win. I mean, the Warriors are going to run away with this again if they have any similar, if they're remotely healthy. They can even, I even think that they could suffer one major injury and still win it. That's how good that team is. And I just don't see anyone else coming close.
Right. Well, in watching the Warriors opener, I thought Kerr was very relaxed with his substitutions, you know, playing basically almost the whole roster, you know, in the first half.
Yeah.
And, you know, and really watching the minutes. Well, Curry got two early fouls in that game as well, so he sat down for a while. But I just thought Kerr was a little lax in his efforts to win that game. And I think in the long haul, it's not going to make that much difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got blown. Didn't they get blown out in their opener last year against the Spurs?
Yeah.
You know, I guess the ring ceremony opening night for the Warriors are one of the few times you might want to try to catch them on the roster, on the schedule.
Indeed. Before we get into the passing of Connie Hawkins, I did want to just get your prediction on the Bulls' total wins this year.
Well, I'm going to struggling with this. I've been kind of anywhere from 18 to 22 wins is where I've been hovering. Mm-hmm. So I'll go in the middle and I'll say 20 wins.
Yeah, I had him at 26 before this incident with Nico and Bobby Portis. So if I had the ability to do it, I already, you know, I've been in a contest for about 20 years with the same guys that I went to college with on predicting, you know, when the Bulls are, how many wins are going to have. And if I could redo it over, I'd have them at 21 or 20. I just don't, you know, the league is so poor, and they're going to have so many bad teams they're going to get to play that, you know, I think they'll find a way to 20 because they'll be playing hard. But I agree. Especially after that injury, it's just, team's not that good, you know. So hopefully we'll see some progress by the end of the year. And I do think they're going to move Lopez.
Right. That's likely to happen, and hopefully we'll get some good assets for that. But, I think they should be able to compete against the Orlandos, Phillies, Brooklyns, Detroit, you know, maybe even Charlotte, you know, Atlanta. Those teams, I think the Bulls should, you know, should be able to compete with those teams.
Yep.
And even with the, you know, the unimpressive roster that
decimated
the Bulls
roster.
Have, either due to health or trades. But, 20 wins. That's what I'm saying.
Sounds good. And to wrap this up, a little bit of comment, some comments on Connie Hawkins, who unfortunately passed away in the interim since our last podcast. Love to get your thoughts on Connie Hawkins and tell the listeners a little bit about him as a player.
Sure. And if some of the listeners listen to our all-time basketball book series, the book Foul, which was written about Connie Hawkins and his life, was very high on that list by an author named David Wolf. So, you know, certainly recommend that as required reading for basketball fans. But Connie Hawkins passed away at age 75, and a couple key things about him, and I was fortunate to see him play as a Phoenix Sun a couple of times in the early 70s. But he was one of those rare New York City playground legends that managed to survive some situations where he was derailed a little bit from getting to his goal to eventually become a basketball Hall of Famer. So he was implicated in a gambling scandal in the early 60s, which hit a number of college players, and probably the most notable were Connie Hawkins and then Roger Brown. Roger Brown, most known for playing for the Indiana Pacers in the ABA, and Roger Brown became vindicated as well and had a outstanding ABA career and is now in the Hall of Fame also. But they were implicated with the scandal but never charged with anything, and basically were kind of blackballed from the NBA. They finally were cleared through a legal suit against the NBA. In fact, the NBA, one of the attorneys representing the NBA in that suit was David Stern, a young David Stern. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Connie Hawkins finally made it to the NBA at age 27. So he played with the Globetrotters. He played in the ABL and the ABA. So most listeners may not know much about the ABL, but you know, an early league that tried to compete with the NBA and force a merger. The ABA, of course, with the red, white, and blue ball, and merged with the NBA in the mid-70s is where Connie really kind of emerged, I guess you'd say. And then at age 27, he became a Phoenix Sun. In his rookie season, averaged 25 a game, first team All-NBA. So he finally made it, but, you know, kind of late in his playing career. But I always looked at him, the Hawk, which was his nickname, and is one of the first guys I ever saw that had the wingspan like a Dr. J and the big hands and would palm the ball. And so it had some flair and length before that was really seen that often. And I always looked at him as a key link in the basketball evolution of you go from Elgin Baylor to Connie Hawkins to probably Spencer Haywood, then Dr. J, then Jordan, and then, you know, evolving into the players, you know, the Vince Carters or even a Kawhi Leonard type player today. Kawhi Leonard, with some of the moves he makes with his big hands and palming the ball and maybe those swoops along the baseline, remind me a lot of moves that Connie Hawkins made back in his prime. So certainly encourage the listeners to maybe look on YouTube at some Connie Hawkins footage, and kind of a fascinating story because he you know, kind of had a rough road there where he was derailed and really didn't know how to fight it, right? He was someone from Bedford-Stuyvesant area of New York, didn't have a lot of resources, a lot of means. And so even though he knew he was innocent, it took some people to kind of step in and help clear his name. And then even then, it took some time to finally get into the NBA. But he had three or four really outstanding seasons at the NBA, with mostly with the Suns, played some with the Lakers, and then the Atlanta Hawks. And then in recent decades, he's been in Phoenix as a community relations speaker for the Suns. You know, so Jerry Colangelo brought him in for the Suns originally when he was cleared to play in the league, and has kind of been a guide and a mentor to the Hawk throughout all these years. And had some health issues in the last years, but one of those guys that kind of was one of the first I saw that really was able to blend the playground style with mainstream basketball and still be a winner and a very successful all-pro type player.
Sounds great. Tim, thank you so much for your time. We're all probably over an hour already, so I can't thank you enough, and I know listeners thank you too for sharing your knowledge with us, and love hearing about some of these older players that unfortunately have passed on. Looking forward to hearing, talking soon about hopefully some wins for the beloved Bulls. League pass is free, I think, until the 24th, so I'm pretty excited about that. I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to watching some more basketball this evening. So all the best, my friend. We'll touch base next week.
All right, Fred.
Take it easy, Tim.